Okay, the April 3rd, 2013 meeting of the Story County Board of Adjustments will come to order. Roll call, please.
Miller.
Aye.
McGill.
Here.
Scarlett.
Here.
Steele. Steelmeyer, absent.
Okay, for the board members, you've been provided with a tentative agenda for tonight's meeting. Do we have any changes or additions to note at this time? Hearing none, that agenda will stand approved as submitted. You've also were provided as part of the pre-meeting materials minutes of our last meeting, which was March 6, 2013. Do we have any corrections, additions to those minutes? Okay. Hearing none, then those will stand approved as they were submitted. All the people, we've got a number of people here tonight. Have you had a chance to sign in?
Thank you
very much. We certainly appreciate that. Take a moment just to review for people who may not have been to a Board of Adjustments meeting before give you an insight into how the meetings are run as we go through this. As we go through each case, the staff will present their report. They will also cover as part of their report any of the letters or communications that they've received from the public. After the staff is done, we will ask the applicant to present their case. We will then give ample opportunity for the public to respond as we go through that. We will then give the applicant another chance to have a closing statement. At that point in time, we will then close that particular case for purposes of deliberation, and we will make a decision here tonight. So it's not something that gets remanded to a later date. So that's the process. I appreciate you signing in. And with that, we'll get going with, I guess, first of all, as I went down through that, do we have any general comments from the public this evening that's not related to the case? Okay. Don't have any of that. Any old business from the board? Moving on to new business then, our first case tonight is CUP 02-13 Jensen Ramsey Conditional Use Permit.
So. Good evening. Again, this case is regarding CUP 02-13, known as the Jensen Ramsey Conditional Use Permit. Request for an indoor recreational facility located in the northeast quarter of Section 34, Palestine Township, along Highway 210, 1 mile east of Highway 69. Current zoning is A2 Agribusiness District. The property is classified as commercial and currently contains a Slant and Stevens processing facility, as well as the proposed use of an indoor recreational facility, which is currently in use illegally. The land use framework map designates this area's cooperative planning area Tier 3, and it's within 2 miles of the city of Huxley. Here you see a Shrine property owner map that was mailed to all property owners within a quarter mile of the subject property, which you can see highlighted there in red. Again, the request is for a conditional use permit to allow for an indoor rec facility, also known as Athlete's Advantage. It is primarily a batting cage for mostly youth and young adults to improve batting and pitching skills. The facility also provides morning small exercise and yoga classes. The hours of operation are Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. to 9 p.m., Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, noon to 8 p.m. The exercise classes, again, generally take place early in the morning. Here you can see some site shots that I took a couple months ago. There you can see the building on the right. I'm looking southeast, in the southeast direction. The sign on the building marking it as Athlete's Advantage, as well as a sign near the right-of-way there also marking it as Athlete's Advantage. So, this is looking to the southwest. These are just the standards of approval that we look at with regard to whether or not we approve conditional use permit requests. And I'll go through each of them one by one. Looking at compatibility standards, staff noted that the facility is adjacent to a swine semen processing facility and is otherwise surrounded by cropland. There is a single-family dwelling approximately 500 feet from the proposed use to the northwest, but as this use is completely contained indoors and does not generate excessive noise, staff does not see this as an issue. We also had heard, got an informal phone call from that property owner, and since the use has been in operation, they haven't had any problems with it. Issues with transition. Transition is created by the distance of the facility and surrounding property structures. The applicant has also proposed plantings along the west and north part of the property to buffer the use from the highway. Issues with traffic and parking and loading. Staff noted that ingress and egress is provided through the driveway and Highway 210. This provides suitable flow for the amount of traffic the uses on the property generate. The site plan provided by the applicant shows 8 parking spaces near the facility and additional 14 spaces to the east of the other facility for that business overflow and overflow for the athletic facility. The applicant expects to need a maximum of 10 spaces. This is within our requirements of our ordinance. The required accessible parking space isn't shown on the site plan. And the applicant also noted that the parking shall be screened by plantings on the west and north sides of the property. Again, looking at signs, as I showed you, there's sign located on the north side of the property along 210, as well as attached to the structure. These signs are permitted, may be permitted through the A2 Agribusiness District. However, we do not have a permit on file. We have since obtained an application for that, for those signs, which we are holding off to the results of this meeting before approving that application. Issues regarding environmental protection, staff noted that the proposed use should have little, if any, impact on vital environmental resources in the area beyond which is already permitted on site. So if the board concludes that all the above development criteria are met, they must approve it unless it doesn't meet any one of those 5 standards, and staff noted that the proposed use, in our opinion, is in accordance with these principles. No comments from the interagency review team, and comments went out to the, or a notification went out to the general public in accordance with Code of Iowa guidelines. The Planning and Zoning Commission met on March 4th regarding this request and recommended approval subject to the following 2 conditions. Again, at least 1 accessible parking space shall be provided on site, and that a permit shall be obtained for existing signs on the property. So with that, I leave you with the following 4 alternatives, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
With the conditions, again, you already have the application for the sign?
For the signs, yep. So that will be taken care of.
One question. What conditional use category is this proposed under?
Indoor rec facility.
Indoor rec facility conditional use category.
Yep.
In the.
Yep.
Okay. I'd like to hear from the applicant. Who speaks for the applicant this evening? Okay. If you would come to the podium and identify yourself, we'd appreciate it.
Hello, Dave Jensen. I'm 50% owner of the actual property. I have no affiliation other than the landlord with Athletes Advantage. All we're looking to do here is to get permission, zoning wise, to let these guys operate this facility. Be more than happy to answer any questions.
I've got one question.
Certainly.
I noted that this went to the initial group or the joint committee back in September, and they've been operating illegally since then. The question is, why didn't, before they put the facility in motion, didn't they get the necessary permit? Do you know?
Well, I think that was probably a case of my misunderstanding or my misinterpretation of what it was zoned for versus what our property taxes. A2 is essentially billed or charged at commercial rates. And it was my understanding that I did not know that, and obviously a recreational facility is not going to operate under agricultural, but at a quick glance, I think it was just an oversight on everybody's behalf. I didn't, as a landlord, dig down far enough, and neither did they.
Yeah, the other building, I assume it regularly has livestock in it?
Yes, it does. The entire facility was built as an equine repro facility. And that's what its intent was. But in 2008, the equine industry basically vacated Iowa, and due to the legislation put in front of the entire U.S. that cut out the domestic slaughter of horses, it really collapsed the horse industry, not only in Iowa but nationwide, and we're left with a facility that was essentially 3 years old. So we're right on the front side of trying to get a business established, and we had just rounded the corner on building clientele, so on and so forth. But due to the collapse of the industry, we had to shut it down, and it's been a scramble literally for the last 5+ years to keep things rolling, not only from the payment but the property taxes. You know, property taxes were railed, since we're A2, we're railed at the commercial rate, and it's a tough road to hoe.
I'm kind of asking you to speak for someone else here, but have you talked about the opinion of the other tenant you have of the swine facility?
Well, up until
it's been operating for a while, so
well up until March 1st of or April 1st of last year, just a little over 12 months ago, I was half owner of the equine facility, but I was also half owner of the boar semen processing facility. And this is, you know, here again, we're just, you know, grasping at straws to try and make things work. We actually took the equine facility and modified the east building, which has been pointed out here, to make it work for us, just so we could utilize the facilities and try and stay ahead of things.
So I guess what I'm asking is, so far, the two drastically
yeah.
different uses are functioning okay. So
yeah, absolutely, because we, you know, as was pointed out, there's a neighbor less than 500 feet across the road. Now, these two things don't clash. Well, conceivably they would clash, but we've tried to adhere to all the DNR standards, but yet the operation isn't big enough to fall into the swine confinement standards as far as a high volume large animal confinement. That being said, we were, you know, very sensitive to the neighbor across the road due to the fact that it was a swine facility, and we put we spent a fair amount of capital to control odors in that facility when we modified it. But to answer your question, no. They're operating 40 feet from one another, and there have been 0.0 issues with potential smell.
Much appreciate it.
Thank you.
Do we have any members of the public that would like to speak to this conditional use permit? Okay. Seeing none, then I'm assuming that you have stated everything you want. I mean, we'll give you the one chance for a closing statement if you wish. Okay. If not, we will close CUP 02-13 for purposes of deliberation. We've got the six criteria that are there: compatibility, transition, traffic, parking and loading, signs and lighting, and environmental protection, along with the two conditions from planning and zoning. Staff has indicated no particular concerns. Is there members of the board that would like to explore one or more of these?
I think the only potential clash on any of those criteria is in the site itself with the two uses, and since it's owned by the same property owner and the tenants are one and the same, I
can't agree with you. Yes. Okay, then first order of business then would be to adopt the findings of fact.
I move that we adopt the findings of fact as prepared for the Board of Adjustment.
I second that.
Okay, we've got a motion from Steele and a second from Scarlett to adopt the findings of facts as presented to the board this evening on CUP 02-13. Roll, please.
Steele?
Yes.
Miller?
Aye.
Scarlett?
Aye.
McGill?
Aye.
Findings of facts that are in there, then we would go on to actually approve the conditional use permit with the two conditions that have been presented by the Planning and Zoning Commission.
Move to adopt the decisions regarding the development criteria in the staff report prepared for and presented the Story County Zoning Board of Adjustment, subject to the two conditions as presented by staff.
Second.
Okay. Got a motion from Miguel and a second from Scarlett to approve the conditional use permit as proposed by the applicant in case number CUP 02-13, along with the conditions that were presented to us from the Planning and Zoning. Roll, please.
Scarlett?
Aye.
McGill?
Aye.
Steele?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye. Okay. CUP is approved as submitted. Thank you very much. The second case this evening is CUP 03-93.4.
Do we need to approve the order?
Yeah. I probably got out of order.
We missed a page. Yeah, we approved the decision.
Okay. I would move to approve the conditional use permit as proposed by the applicant and subject to the two conditions laid out in the decision.
Second.
Motion from Steele and a second from Scarlett to approve conditional use permit as proposed in case CUP 02-13 with the conditions from planning and zoning.
Scarlett?
Aye.
McGill?
Aye.
Steele?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye. I got my papers out of order. My apologies.
Okay.
Now the CUP 02-13 is approved. Going on to the second case this evening, we have CUP 03-93.4 firing range.
Good
Good evening.
Hi, Leanne.
Property owner is Story County. This particular application, the property address is located on 210th, along at 60550 in section 35 Milford Township. Currently, the property is zoned A1 agricultural. There is currently a firing range in use on the property. It has been for a number of years through conditional use permit CUP-03-93. The site is assessed as an exempt classification according to the Story County Assessor's Office. It is designated on the land use framework map of the county development plan as one of the cooperative planning areas, in fact, Tier 3, and it does lie within 2 miles of the city of Nevada. Before you this evening is a request to modify the conditional use permit for the existing firing range. We did seek legal counsel on this particular application in that the request by the sheriff is to modify a condition that was in fact placed by the Board of Adjustment. So the ability for staff to issue any type of insignificant modification done administratively was not present because it was a condition by the board. On the screen here and in your staff report are the three types of modifications that may be sought for conditional use permits. There are three tiers, insignificant, minor, and major. Insignificant, again, being done by staff administratively. Minor are those that come right to the Board of Adjustment. Major are those processes, entirely new applications that go through the process with Planning and Zoning Commission, Board of Adjustment anew. And again, this is a minor modification. This is a surrounding property owner map. The Hatchton areas are those properties within a quarter mile, thank you, of the site that were received the mailing of the notice for tonight's meeting. Current conditions of approval are on the slide and were in the staff report too. So really it's letter number G that requires two or more people, at least one of which is a certified peace officer, which will be present any time the firing range is used, is what the sheriff is asking to amend this evening. And he is present, and I'm sure we'll be glad to answer any questions and address this in greater detail. As a conditional use permit, as outlined in the staff report, modifications to those conditional use permits must continue to achieve the standards for approval. I'm not going to go through those since Ryan just did for the past application. Same criteria, development impacts for even modifications. Before you are for alternatives, you may approve it on the conditional use permit as put forth in CUP-03-93.4. You may approve it with conditions. You may deny it. Lastly, you may remand it back to staff for further review, or to the applicant. I do want to note in the draft decision and order that's in front of you, if you look at the end of the order, I've included the conditions as are currently and highlighted that letter G because that in essence is what is before you. Staff did not propose any additional language. I wanted to call your attention to that. Do you have any questions for me? You've seen this several times in different
sure.
modifications, so I did try to keep this brief.
Indicated that the only reason why this is here is because it's associated with a condition that was previously set by the Board of Adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I get
right.
that. If that had not been a condition, would this have still been the minor modification, or?
I don't know. It's
I'm
kind of
going through. Are
yeah.
we just going through a formality here?
I think I still probably would have brought it forward as a minor modification because it is addressing the impact of the use, and that is, I think, more suited your role than administratively. I have, on this particular instance, issued an insignificant modification in one or maybe two situations for different improvements on the site that did not have, had no discernible impact on the surrounding neighborhood.
Do you have an exact wording of how the condition is proposed to be changed?
In the staff report, in the staff report, you do have the sheriff's request, and I think it'd be I would just suggest you listen to the sheriff too and hear the rationale. I struggled with how that would be written, and I really wanted to hear from him.
Okay. Other questions for staff? Nope. Okay. Thank you very much. Any comments from the public on this one, Leanne?
We've had inquiries based on surrounding property owner notification as to what the nature of the improvements or changes were, and I do believe some of those people are here tonight, too. We have not received any written input.
Much. I'd like to turn it over now to the applicant. If you'd like to approach the podium, we'd appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Board. We have some changes in the Sheriff's Office as far as utilization of personnel, which basically was the rationale why we're bringing this proposal forward. First and foremost is in the Sheriff's Office, we're trying to see that we can provide the best security, most professionally trained security we can to the people in Story County. That certainly includes the Justice Center where the courthouse is. In the courthouse, a while ago, we had changed where we started to arm our detention officers for specific duties, such as court security, such as prisoner transport, these type of areas, so we wouldn't have to bring certified uniformed officers in, which we had very few in the first place. So in order to do that, we started arming these detention officers, and then we started looking at what other functions could they perform. So as we started to move in the direction of utilizing our detention officers, one of the first things we did was contact Story County's insurance carrier, Nat Tedesco. And they come over, we explain the rationale, what we're doing with them, and they have been very supportive of our efforts and have no problems as far as carrying the insurance for the county for our proposals. One of the recent things that we are doing is that we're also now allowing the detention officers to serve as members of the emergency response team, or SWAT team, as you would call. And some have been selected, and they're going through the training there as well. As an example of the detention officers that we have one detention officer that was retired from the Ames Police Department, came to work for us, and when he was on the Ames Police Department, he was also on their emergency response team. So it's a logical progression to open this up to include these people. Detention officers are required internally by my policy to receive identical certification as any other peace officer that goes through the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy. So they'll receive the same type of training that our officers do, and then they are under the employment of the Sheriff's Office. They're covered by the insurance, and has also had the full support of the Board of Supervisors as we moved in this direction. Now, as I've often used the analogy of bowling, if you only bowl once a year, you probably aren't going to be a very good bowler. Well, if you only go out to shoot once a year and we have qualification, you probably aren't going to be a very good shot. So we wanted to open this up, and we started with certified officers so they could go out on their own and practice. And again, these are professional law enforcement people that are going out to the range. And we've always, from the conception of when we first built the range in the mid-1990s, that we wanted to be, number one, be good neighbors in the area, and we wanted to be responsible. But the responsibility goes much farther than just that area. It goes to the responsibility for the entire county and the entire state of Iowa. So we started out with having only firearms being done out there when there's a certified firearms ILEA instructor on scene. Then it was modified so we would have a certified law enforcement officer on scene. Now, as you will see where we have moved, that the logical progression is that a employee of the Sheriff's Office who is appropriately trained in the use and carrying of firearms also be allowed to go out and have the ability to practice with their firearm as well. And that was the first request that we're asked to be changed. That I'm specifically asking the requirement of having a certified peace officer present at any time the firing range is used be changed to include trained sheriff's office personnel. Now, the second portion that we're asking for has to do with retired law enforcement officers. Federal law a few years ago created a law that allows any officer that has served 10 years as a certified officer and left that agency in good standing now can carry a concealed weapon nationwide instead of having a permit. Their retired employment credentials is in lieu of the permit. However, one of the requirements is that the person carrying that permit must qualify with a law enforcement agency annually and carry their qualification scorecard with them with their retired permit in order to do that. So we allow officers to come in and to have their shoot that we basically put out at the sheriff's office, and so they can earn their qualification, and also throughout the year as they would like to come out and with their past demonstrated professionalism in law enforcement, that they also would be responsible individuals who would also adhere to our policies. And with that, I would open it up to any questions that the board may have. If I may, Mr. Chairman, Don or Sean, did I leave anything out? Okay.
Referred to a certification several times, saying that detention officers have to have the same certification as other law enforcement officers. Is there an official name for that certification? Can you give me the
firearm certification? Sean is one of our instructors.
The Iowa Law Enforcement Academy does that, so it's all a document or a piece of paper. So they're actually the same thing that you would be with your academy.
So Iowa Law Enforcement Academy.
Firearms instructors. Well, okay, certified.
Say, what do you walk away with? What's your certificate say when you walk away with it?
I don't think they actually provide them a certificate or anything like that. But they're registered through the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy as being certified to carry a firearm within Iowa.
Officers in Iowa to retain their certification have to receive a minimum of 12 hours of training every year over a three-year period, receive 36 hours of training. In the Story County Sheriff's Office, every employee receives a minimum of 48 hours of training a year. Most of our officers receive over 100 hours of training a year. We believe very strongly in training. Now, when we do training, whether it's in hazmat, whether it's in bloodborne pathogens, whether it's in CPR, report writing, whatever, the training that we do, we report to the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy. They keep records there and maintain those records. The only thing that I remember we'd give certificates out for would be for CPR, Red Cross, maybe some hazmat courses. But firearms training is recorded by the firearms instructors and submitted to the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy for record keeping.
Idea on some numbers. How many people, on this item G, which is a specific request, certified peace officers, how many of your staff are certified in the manner that's there, and then how many other people are using the facility? Are we talking about 25% certified and 75% others that are using it?
Story County Sheriff's Office has 83 full-time staff. I have 31 that are sworn, and those officers are all carry firearms, of course.
Certified, which is
when I say certified.
Certified peace officer, is that the 31?
That's the 31. 31 certified licensed peace officer.
So we've got 31 who are eligible to meet that requirement.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's how many others that are...
We have a
user range and who aren't.
We have a cap of 20 reserves, but currently we have how many reserve officers? We have 9 reserve officers right now that also use the range. And then the detention officers, do you know the number of detention officers? 6 detention officers currently that use the range. We do not arm all the detention officers. That first and foremost is a voluntary position since they are civilian employees, and enhanced duties require them to go through the necessary training to be able to carry a firearm in public and to carry out the responsibilities that come with that depending upon their assignment.
Trying to get at is the same thing I'm wrestling with a little bit. I don't have any problem, but I'm just wondering if maybe we shouldn't consider some language that says, no doubt training with you, Paul, everything is fine, but if your successor comes in there and is a little bit loose, what we do here could affect that. So I'm wondering if we should put some language in there, something to the effect of some sort of the Iowa Academy certification for the people that use the range. See what I'm getting at?
Yeah, if you would like to do that, basically, I thought I had, well, my letter states to include trained sheriff's office personnel, and our requirements only allow somebody that has those same amount of training hours to receive sheriff's office certification to be able to carry a firearm. That certainly could change with anyone who comes in and holds my chair. But I think what you're seeing in the progression, the evolution of law enforcement, is tending towards the direction of more and more professionalism. Somebody, sure, could come in and really take it the other direction. But in competitive elections that we have, and for someone to come in, it would be very difficult in this day and age to see someone come in who would not be a professional, who would not have the best interest in the county and would have the opportunity to demonstrate those traits.
I guess we're trying to understand, you know, you're making the request to go from certified peace officer to trained people. And we're trying to understand, I guess, what the difference is. Is this a baby step? Is this a big step?
The difference here is, in Iowa, to be a law enforcement officer, you have to be certified. In other words, licensed by the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy to make arrests, to take people's rights away from them. The detention officers are non-state certified, but they are certified through jail standards to be a correction officer. I've moved that farther down the road to also allow them to transport prisoners, to do jail security, and now most recently they're moving to also be included in our emergency response team as personnel. The basic difference is the sworn law enforcement officers have the certification as a peace officer, where the detention officers do not have that peace officer certification.
Okay, so you've changed job responsibilities, and we've all cut our staff, and I think we all understand what that brings with it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that requirement G that says 2 or more people, at least one of which is a certified peace officer, will be present any time the firing range is used, with more people carrying weapons, as you've depicted that you're now requiring different positions to carry that didn't used to, does this represent, in your opinion, a hardship on you today then?
Well,
the biggest reason for bringing this forth?
There are certain things that we balance. I have never looked at utilizing our detention officers because of a hardship. It certainly dovetails nicely with the area of responsibilities that they have, combined with what their capabilities are to carry out the mission of the sheriff's office. Now, more appropriately, the limited staff that I have in the certified positions with the 3 shifts that we run every day, it's more effective for me to be able to put these people in their normal duty assignments, in patrol, civil process, extradition of prisoners, things like this where certified officers have to do those roles. And also at the same opportunity, take able-bodied individuals with the appropriate and equal training that our certified officers have, and covering the bases with liability from insurance including the Board of Supervisors, in on my rationale before moving forward with those decisions. I think we have a situation that is coming along quite nicely. And the professionalism that we require of our officers, you will see the same professionalism, whether required through our policy and procedures or self-imposed by the quality of individuals that we hire in the sheriff's office. I am very comfortable with the individuals that we have out there and giving them the responsibility of going out and practicing on their own when they have that, and that's encouraged. We have a range that we built in the mid-1990s, and I believe we've been good neighbors. And this is something where you have trained personnel who are handling firearms in a facility that's designed for such purposes. It's not like when you're driving in the fall through the countryside and anybody who has a shotgun is out running crossing the fields and ravines and things like this. We have professional people. And we also have, as you know, occasionally the Ames Police Department has used our range. Iowa State University, Department of Public Safety, their police force comes out and trains at our range. And our tactical teams train at the range as well. So,
you mentioned a couple of times the term on their own. And yet the requirement on number G was two or more people have to be there all the time. Are you actually asking that there not be two or more?
What I'm meaning by on their own is if I have two or three detention officers that want to go out one afternoon and shoot on their own, is they don't have to go get a certified officer to come and accompany them.
So the process today is if a detention person, you know, wanted to hone their skills, if you will, would have to find one of your 31 today to go out at the same time.
Or an Ames officer, that's a certified peace officer, but another peace officer you'd have to come out to shoot.
But in the future, instead, two detention people, I mean, are you going to have a list of who's, quote, trained?
We know who's trained, yes. I mean,
I'm just trying to...
Yeah, and we keep records of whoever wants to use the range signs in and signs out, and they go out and use the range during those times.
I think I understand where you're headed, and I totally agree, and I want to accommodate that, but I have the word trained is awfully ambiguous, and so all I'm doing right now is in my mind searching for some standard that we could apply all across these three groups of people, whether it's a number of, you mentioned, for example, your detention officer, armed detention officers get the same firearms training that your certified officers, your sworn officers do. Is that correct?
That is correct.
How many hours is that? Is it annually?
40 hours. Sean, is that 40 hours of training?
Yes, the state of Iowa is actually certified, though. Even though I'm running them through on our range, they give me the minimum.
Sorry. Leanne's right. We're keeping this for the record, so we appreciate it if you come forward.
They're all meeting the minimum qualifications the state of Iowa has set. They send me the minimum qualifications. I take them out of the range. The only difference, what we're doing at our range versus Iowa Academy, when somebody goes through the academy, it's here. It's the same shoot. Same minimum qualifications, and we're actually holding to a higher standard because that's 1,000 rounds for them to become qualified through the state. And I'd say our people are averaging probably 1,300-1,400 because we're taking their lower standards and we're increasing those. When they complete that, I sign off on that. I sign off that they've completed every part of that and send it down to the ILEA board. For our reserves, it takes about 2 months for the ILEA board to see that paperwork for they. Send the paperwork back up that they're certified. But they're all being certified through the academy. So they're certified through the state of Iowa to carry a firearm while on duty.
So is it accurate to say that your training is Iowa Law Enforcement Academy endorsed firearms training? Is
mandated.
Mandated.
Yeah. They tell me on a piece of paper, it's a form, exactly everything, and then we take that and we go above that.
But you're authorized to represent the academy in carrying out the training they require?
I'm a certified Iowa instructor, yes.
Right. So if we were to take craft some language that would apply to all three of these groups that said something to the effect of must have minimum 40-hour, anyone with minimum 40 hours annually of training as required by the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy.
Now, that training is at the beginning. They don't have to go through that every year. That's it's the same as when they go to the academy. You're going to find a lot of law enforcement officers throughout Iowa only shoot 50 rounds per year after the academy.
Okay. So what's the maintenance standard annually? Is there a maintenance requirement?
One qualification round, which is 50 rounds. You have to qualify once a year.
Okay. So, I mean, if the wording said something to that effect, the initial 40 hours plus up to date on qualification.
If I could suggest, what if we would maybe include in here to include trained sheriff's office personnel mirroring those requirements held by the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy.
Yeah, or perhaps when certified peace officers or sheriff's department personnel trained to that standard. You know, something to that effect in firearms. You understand what I mean when it says trained sheriff's department personnel, how that 15 years from now could be interpreted in many, many different ways.
Sure. It could be interpreted tomorrow many different ways.
Right. Well, and that's what I'm trying to avoid here.
Attention, when they get certified by the Iowa Firearms Academy, when you send the results in, do they get a certificate or a license or something of that nature?
They don't get anything returned, no.
Do they have, but they're registered somewhere as being
We have
certified?
A firearm certification card that Sean will sign off to that we carry for my federal permit so I can carry anywhere in the country. And as a full-time officer, I still have that form. But he signs off on that. It doesn't go through the academy. We have the forms here that are authorized by the academy, and we send out. The Iowa Law Enforcement Academy calls upon us periodically to send our instructors down when they're shorthanded and they're having a recruit class going through, and we go down and teach there. It hones our skills as firearms instructor, and it helps the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy out because they're shorthanded, so they utilize our people that they trained to certify new classes going through. So it's an ongoing process.
Would this language work for you? Into G, where it says, at least one of which is a certified peace officer or personnel similarly trained by the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy?
Would that include the retired officers also?
That's the retired yet. That's more questions on that one. But I'm trying to get down to, does that, you know, we say that a certified officer, so that's kind of where we start, draw the line, or personnel similarly trained, okay, in firearms management and range operations and et cetera, by the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy, does that get us to the point?
By certified or trained.
By or. I'm saying or. So we're tying in similar training by the Law Enforcement Academy
I can work
and
that.
Not by somebody else who just
signing.
Is that?
That's what I'm after. I'm just after some here. Clear standard.
Yeah.
And all of our training is through IOA. I mean, it's not other departments, and we don't accept that. Everything does go through IOA, so I think that wording does good.
I get that. Any other questions on that part of it for the applicant? Now the retired. That's a separate issue. It's kind of amended in here to the side. I guess the thing I'd like to get a little bit in that, as written, these are any retired. I mean, it doesn't have anything to do with Story County. It doesn't have anything to do with whatever. I mean, how many people do you have that currently that would request to use your range that would be in that category? I mean, from anywhere? Or
we are pulling together a shoot that we're trying to do annually. And when I say by a shoot, what we're doing is opening it up from like 11 to 7 or something for officers, retired officers, to come out, and we'll have firearms instructors there that would run them through the certification course, and they could shoot. So we'll have people there on the days they do that. But the rest of the
event that you would hold once a year, three times a year or something?
Once a year.
And we're, however, throughout the year, again, going back to the bowling analogy I did, retired officer like anyone else, if they don't practice, they, you know, I mean, it's going to be hard for them to come through and get through the certification course, as it would any officer. So we're just proposing, with the years of service they would have had and a law enforcement agency, that they could come in, again, sign out for the range they're responsible for when they're out there. We assign in sheets and standards that they have to comply with. And it's not only, I've opened it up so it's not only just for Story County deputies that have retired, it would be for law enforcement officers living in this area. I have a deputy that retires here and moves to Phoenix, Arizona, and retires down there. How practical is it to require him to come back here to shoot? So he'd go to Maricopa County and work with that agency, and they would have him shoot their qualification course and sign off on his card.
Right now, there's nothing in the permit conditions that even require a Story County, any kind of Story County personnel to be present when the range is being used.
No, we've had the Ames Police Department out there, Iowa State University police out there doing training, and we don't have anybody from our staff. They come in, they make arrangements for it, they sign in and out, and it's their responsibility if they're out there.
Well, if a retired person was going to go out there, since there has to be two, you're going to, by and large, I assume, know they're going to be out there because they're going to have to have contacted one of the other people on your staff to be there as well.
Well, if one of their staff, or if they have a couple of retired, like Ames, you go over Wednesday afternoon to the Hy-Vee, and there's a table of them sitting having coffee. You know, two or three of them wanted to come out and shoot one afternoon. This would allow them to do that.
So they would then fall into this category that we talked about, persons similarly trained by the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy.
Well, they would have gone through the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy, sure.
I want to make sure I understood, because that is a different element that was kind of a put in at the end. Other questions for the applicant? Okay. Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Sure, I have a question.
Well, we're going to open it up for the public comment would be the next portion. Anything else you'd like to say at this point?
Thank you for your time.
Okay, now we will open it up to the public for anyone that would like to address comments associated with this. If you'd approach the podium, we'd appreciate it.
I agree with law enforcement that...
Do you have your name, please?
Oh, I'm Chris Rose.
Okay, thank you.
And I agree with the law enforcement being able to use it as long as there's two people out there and one of them is certified, or they both are. I have a little problem with retired law enforcement being able to use it. I'm afraid that kind of sounds like they're going to use it as a practice range. And that if there's not an employed officer with them, and I'm not, you know, I'm the Iowa Law and Iowa Police Academy and get certified once a year. I mean, I'm having a problem with thinking that this is going to become a shooting, you know, a practice range, like you go down to Granger or if you want to practice shooting and things like that. If they only have to be certified once a year, would that limit how many times they could go? Or how many of them could go at one time? I mean, I'm having a little problem with making it. It sounds like it's retired general public going out to use a state.
Let me clarify.
Yeah, please. Please.
Or help me understand. So you're saying if the law enforcement officers are retired, then the facility is not being used to train individuals for law enforcement. It's
right.
Now being used to train them for their own personal protection, or for their own personal enjoyment, but not for law enforcement.
Okay. You know, I picked up on it when he said there's a table of retired law enforcement officers at Hy-Vee having coffee. Well, maybe they'll decide they need to go and do some target shooting that afternoon, then we'd have the whole group. That's, to me, I mean, I honor their commitment to the, you know, to us all these years and everything. But when you retire and you're, you know, general public, I'm a little concerned about opening up a target range more than a practice range.
I think we understand your concern. Thank you very much. Can you give your name, please?
Lloyd Brown. I live at 61192 210th Street, so I'm within a quarter or a half a mile of the firearm shooting range. I would echo the comments that were just made in the person in front of me. I don't have any problem of changing it from the requirement that it be a certified peace officer to a trained sheriff office personnel, particularly the way you have discussed it and in the scenario that you have painted here. But I do have a problem of opening it up to the qualified retired law enforcement officers. One of the questions I was going to have clarification, which has been clarified, this is a county facility, but according to the presentation this evening, it's opened up to anyone who has been retired from any place within Iowa, within U.S. So if there is consideration of approving this second modification, I would ask that you at least reduce it to either they have to live in the county or preferably they would have had to have retired from law enforcement here in Story County and not open it up just to everybody. I would also ask then, can the sheriff give us some idea of what his expected increase of usage might be if both of these modifications are made?
I suspect he may address that with his closing statement.
Because it's one issue if it's an increase of usage, you know, 10% or something like that. But if it's 50% or doubling the usage, it certainly affects all property owners, anyone living in the area, as far as the disturbance, as far as traffic, particularly the deaths from the gravel road. Sure.
Well, how often are they out there? I don't live in the country. I don't live near it. How many days a week are they out there?
I think the sheriff would be best to answer that question.
Okay.
I'm not home during the week for some reason. I'm working.
I thought maybe you had an idea of how often they were out there.
Right. I've asked the sheriff to answer that question. I would say that if you're thinking of passing it without any more confinement relative to the retired law enforcement officer, I would ask that you reject it. I just don't think that's fair to the people living in the community. But if it can be modified so it just would allow retired law enforcement officers who have retired from service here in Story County, no problem.
Anyone else?
I'm Carolyn Bose, and I own the property that surrounds it with my sister. And if they allow the retirees, does your insurance cover them too? I am a farmer out there. I'm kind of concerned, and I don't know if I should be, but that's why I'm here. Do I need to be concerned when he has to put the crop in and take it out? I've been out there when they've been practicing. I don't get out of my car, but I've seen them leave. So I do know they're out there practicing. But I am concerned about my farmer, if he's going to get, or if I should be or not, I don't know.
Anyone else this evening?
Evening. Marty Chitty. I live at 60831 210th Street, just to the north of the facility. And I like the history that the sheriff shared with you. It's been an evolving process. It hasn't always been perfect, but I think everybody has made a good faith effort to make this work. It's a facility that serves the communities in the county, and he has tried to maximize its use. That I appreciate, and he has been responsive, and his department, Don and Scott, have done well in addressing any concerns. And as far as him thinking out of the box to utilize his detention officers to being armed to work within the department without adding staff, I applaud that as a taxpayer, and I have no qualms with that. Use the facility as you see fit. I appreciate you probing and digging down on the language, because as we all leave the board, as yourselves will leave the board, and as the sheriff will leave his office, that will be, going forward, your legacy to them on how the range is used. My concern, I think I would probably share with them, I understand that, I have friends that have retired from the law enforcement here in Story County, and if they wish to carry on a concealed basis going forward, I do not have any problems whatsoever seeing them remain armed in that capacity, and if this facility would allow that to be to happen, so be it. My question is, when you open it up, I would echo, what is the use, potential usage, and are these people going to be subject to notification to the sheriff's office before they just show up? Because as the neighbors, we're just like, okay, who's that? Who, what's he doing? We have no way of knowing who's there and what's not. I know they keep a pretty good eye on the place. They keep it locked up. But we don't know who's there, who's not. I would like to, and I have spoken with the sheriff about it, and he seemed pretty amenable to it. If you do move in that direction, some signage to reflect what you have done as far as the hours of usage, to reflect that you have people that would not necessarily know what we take for granted as you have implemented this, as he abides by it in his department, so that they would be subject to those very same things, that they would have no reason, I believe, to know it. I don't believe I have anything else other than the fact that I appreciate your probing questions. Thank you.
Comments from the public? Okay, if not, we will turn it back over to the applicant for any closing statements.
Again, thank you, board. I will keep this short, and I don't mean to ramble. In my 36 years of law enforcement, with a large municipal agency, and now the last 20 years as your Story County Sheriff, public safety, we've always had the feeling that sometimes we're asked to do a lot more with a lot less. And everyone has. These have been tight budget times. But when you have a call for help, something that you may not think of quite often during the year, such as your fire department or your police department or your paramedic service, when you need them, you want the best trained, the best equipped, and the best qualified people to handle your particular call. Now, whether you're looking at an acreage out in a rural area, or you're looking in a school setting where there's all kinds of children, or in a mall, and an officer comes up and has to draw his weapon, do you want an officer that goes to the range once a year and qualifies with 50 rounds of ammunition, or do you want somebody who is more proficient and more professional in their skills? That's what we try to encourage within the Sheriff's Office in Story County, is professionalism through training and standards. And that's what, under my leadership, I believe we have brought to the county and will continue to use in the county. As far as the retired officers, long-standing professional law enforcement officers who have received training throughout their career now are going to utilize those same training skills when they come out to practice their proficiency. These are the same people that are going to be carrying their firearms in the malls, around the schools, in different areas where the public gathers. And again, it comes back to training. You want somebody going into the bowling championships that bowled once that year. It's the same type of analogy. The number of hours, the increase, first of all, it's very hard for me or for any law enforcement administrator to get your full-time people to go out and practice on their own. let alone have the retired people go out. But occasionally, now and then, they may want to. This is not, from my experience, this will certainly not be a case where it's just going to be beat to death. This is going to be a situation that when it's not being used for a training day by one of the agencies, then somebody calls up, wants to go out there in an afternoon and shoot for a couple hours, well, it would be available to them. But to go out there and monitor to see who all is being used, to look at our logs, I don't think you'd see that it's really being a hardship or a burden on the public that does live around the area. We've always worked to be good neighbors, and if we don't have the training facility out in the northwest part of Nevada where it is now, where will we have it? When I became sheriff, it was a range that was the indoor range over at the Iowa National Guard. But that was short-lived because they had to close it down because of lead poisoning purposes and things of that nature. So now we were going out to farm fields to try to practice. It's too expensive to send people down continuously to Iowa Law Enforcement Academy. So we have a range that we built with no taxpayer dollars. It was appraised at about $80,000. We used drug forfeiture funds to put the fence around it, the security fence that we have. And we provided our standards and ethics as we work out there. And very proud of the reputation that we've had the last number of years since it's opened in the mid-1990s. There has been no serious complaints, no complaints I know of that were validated. So with that, I will put this back on your wisdom and judgment, and I ask that you favorably look upon these requests as we have made to you tonight.
A couple of just very kind of quick questions around this, if you will. I mean, you've heard public comments from the public neighbors. All of them have been supportive of what you're doing so far and supportive mm-hmm. of law enforcement. I haven't heard anybody that's against that. They do have a concern that the range not be used. I'll just use the term casually. Now, we're talking about firearms. I know casually and firearms don't go together well, but I'm hearing them say that they don't want it to be casually. So if we did put some reasonable limitations so that it didn't have that appearance, if we had something that said that retired certified peace officers who have served Story County or who reside in Story County were allowed to use it up to X number of times a year, is that something that's workable?
I would certainly work with the Board of Adjustment to whatever you would think would be reasonable. But in practicality, if you're retired and you don't live in this county, or you're not from this county and coming back visiting relatives that might go out and shoot one afternoon, I don't know of anybody from another part of the state that's come down here and retired from some other agency and want to just come down and shoot at our range. Reasonableness just I don't think would yield to that.
I suspect you're right, but we're trying to address some concerns of neighbors that are in the area. And I'm just asking for a retired person, if they were to use it, to maintain their skills, so not in a casual manner, but they want to prepare themselves. How many visits in a year might that be that would be reasonable to stay qualified in order to meet their annual qualification shoot?
I don't know. I don't know if we put on a dozen that somebody might be out there three times. I mean, I just don't know. One of the other things that we've always been amenable to, that if something does become problematic, that the sheriff be contacted. And there's been a couple of times that I have been contacted to ask to do something. Tonight, Mr. Chitty asked about signage. Said done. No problem to do that. So we'll put up signs showing the shooting hours and dates out there. That's not a problem at all.
That probably is a very good comment. That was one of the other things I was going to bring
sure.
up.
Sure. And we're happy to listen to the public when they do that. Mr. Brown had asked one time, he was having a function and he wanted to make sure that there was no firearms training going on that time. So, sure, we looked at our schedule. There was no training going on at that time, and we were gladly able to accommodate him. You know, if there's something coming up or a concern that is going on there, I appreciate a phone call. We want to be good neighbors. And if there's something out there that's a concern, let us know. And if the traffic does get back to be too much, I would certainly sit down and talk with them, see what we could do to help resolve their issue or even bring it back in front of the Board of Adjustment.
My first question, I guess, is does Ames, the City of Ames or Iowa State, pay anything to use the facility?
No, they do not.
And the question that Carolyn asked about the farmer, is there a possibility someone could be hit by a bullet? And who does cover that?
Well, this is what we have insurance for, and this is why I brought the insurance NAP to DESCO out to address that issue. So that's covered. Whenever you're dealing with firearms, no one can say, oh, there's never going to be an accident. That's why it's classified as accident. But that's why we have standards that are imposed on our people to see that we do everything we can do to minimize and mitigate that risk. I cannot stay here and say we will never have an accident.
I know. I appreciate that. Well, I guess my last question is, if a gentleman or a woman has retired from the law enforcement office and say they reach a point in their life where maybe they're not as mentally fit as they should be, but they still have the ability to carry, who grants them that ability to carry the gun? Just simply because they were
the United States government.
So, okay.
It's a federal law, and it is what it is. in Iowa, they've even changed it so the sheriff no longer has the right to restrict permits. Iowa moved from a may issue state in 2010 and took effect in 2011 to a shall issue. So basically, anybody that can see over the counter, if they don't have a federal felony record, they get a permit.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Board.
I'll close this hearing, so we won't take any more comments from the public or the applicants unless you're specifically asked to approach the bench. So we'll close that now and begin deliberations. We've got the findings of fact from the staff. Does anyone have any question about the merits or the inclusiveness of the findings of fact? Not, I'd ask for a motion.
I'd move to adopt the findings of fact as presented in the staff report.
Second. Got a motion from Steele and a second from McGill to adopt the findings of fact that's in the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Board of Adjustments. Roll, please.
Steele.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Scarlett.
Aye.
McGill.
Aye.
We have the same conditions that we had the last time, although we're kind of specifically down to the point that the only items, nothing has changed relative to the conditions, and the request doesn't change any of the six conditions as I can see them. And if anybody from the board has a problem with that, if not, I'd like to have a motion to adopt the decision regarding the criteria.
To adopt the decision regarding the development criteria in the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Zoning Board of Adjustment.
Second.
We have a motion from Scarlett and a second from McGill to adopt the decision regarding the development criteria in the staff report prepared for and presented to the Story County Board of Adjustments. Roll, please.
Miller.
Aye.
Scarlett.
Aye.
McGill.
Aye.
Steele.
Aye.
Then we come down to the final portion of that, which is to determine, there are really two issues that are in front of us. One is the potential modification of condition G that we have talked about, and one of the things that I had proposed as we went through this is that we modify G to say two or more people, at least one of which is a certified peace officer or personnel similarly trained by the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy, will be present any time the firing range is used. Does that work for people? That brings the two. I know, Aaron, you had.
Yeah, I might just suggest or Sheriff's Department personnel trained to a comparable Iowa Law Enforcement Academy firearms training standard, and rather than similar. I don't know. I'm probably just.
I'm like you. The language, just so we make sure we've got the proper certification on the individual. in writing, because, you know, this could come back someday.
Oh, I guess I like the term comparable better than similar.
Okay.
Just a comfort thing, I guess.
Okay. So it would be personnel comparably trained by the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy?
Yeah. I guess I would say there's, like you pointed out, there's the other issue of the structure we have to operate in here, which is whether this is an appropriate minor modification. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if we stop the language there, it's an appropriate minor modification. I can feel like comfortable saying that the change in impact on the public is so small that the health, safety, and welfare of the public is not threatened. If we added the retired officers, I might still feel that way, but I can't confidently say that right now. And so I would feel like if the Sheriff's Department is going to insist on that language, that it should probably come back as a major modification. I'm not even sure if that's the right process, Lan, but yeah.
I have no problem with the retired officers as long as they do reside in or are retired from Story County. Range is for the benefit of those that are in the county, and I think there's some merit to that.
I would point out, though, that right now, retired officers are not prohibited from using it. This, what they're asking is for a retired officer to be one of the two people that says it is now safe to use this facility. I'm on site. We can use the facility because I'm a retired, in good standing police officer, law enforcement officer. So a retired officer, if I understand this correctly, even without the change in language, could use the range with the presence of one of these other two classes of officer.
That's a good point.
It's inconvenient, but I'm not sure it's our job to make sure that there's a retirement benefit extended to police officers in making this convenient for them. I mean, I think our job is to...
And that they're allowed to use it now, so long as they're in touch with the...
Right, and, you know, there's only 31 or so of these officers. It's probably not easy to find somebody who's going to give up the time to go out there with them. So it is inconvenient, but again, our duty here is to the public, not to the convenience of a retired officer.
Well, if that is the case, then we would not add, at one point in time, I thought we might be adding a condition H, but I think Aaron makes a bit of a compelling argument that says that they are not excluded now, but there is something, an extra step they have to do in terms of engagement. How do other people feel about that? So then what we would be considering at this point in time as we move to an order or motion would be to amend item G, that we would approve it, amending condition G to add in the or personnel comparably trained by the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy. Is that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you think that we need to ask the sheriff now if that is an adequate solution or whether he would like to come back with a major modification? Lan, would that be, or do we need to either approve or deny this minor modification that's in front of us?
That's the way it's been presented.
Well, yeah. Of course, one of your alternatives would be to remand it back to the applicant for further review. But I think based on discussions today, there is a remedy that, at least for item G, you've presented that may be amenable to the sheriff as well as the Board of Adjustment.
Yes. Sheriff, if you would go ahead and approach the podium, we appreciate it at our request. You kind of heard what Aaron said. This retired thing, how much of a showstopper is this from your perspective?
I'm bringing proposals to the Board of Adjustment that I think that's going to enhance the Sheriff's Office and our ability to train. And I guess in response, I do feel that from working with people throughout the years in the Sheriff's Office or in the Police Department here in Ames or at Iowa State University or in the Nevada Police, that there is an obligation. And I'm not trying to extend a right of benefit for somebody that's retired. But these people do live in our community. They are going out, and some of them are carrying weapons in the community where my family members live and shop at the malls and things like this. And if they do, it all comes back to training and professionalism. I bring my proposal to the board. If the board chooses to deny the reserve officer or the retired officer, I don't intend on coming back with that issue.
How often today, let's just say, I mean, and I hadn't even thought about it until Aaron brought it up, how often today are retired officers joining other people out of the ranks?
They're not. And this has only came to us, and perhaps maybe it was a matter of convenience for it. Because with the federal law that came into effect, the retired officer is saying we want to come in and get their retired placard and badge, so we give them that. But the law also says they have to qualify at a law enforcement agency annually by our standards. So this is where we're now doing an annual shoot for them. And other than that, I don't ever know of any retired officers that come out and say, hey, we'd like to go out and shoot in the afternoon. Like I said earlier, it's hard enough to get full-time people to try to get them to go out and train, let alone somebody's retired. Sean, do you know of a group of individual retired officers that have ever gone out and come out and asked to shoot?
Well, this is working for you today.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Okay. I qualify the retired officers on that once a year, and there's maybe 10 or 12. So we're not talking about a large group of people by any means. The people that would take advantage of this would probably be maybe 4 to 6.
So on those instances, you would be the officer that would satisfy this requirement, that would say, it's okay to shoot here now, because I'm here.
No, no. That's what I was saying. See, because then I'm paying him time and a half to go out and do that. Now, we have retired.
But you said you qualify them once a year.
Once a year, we do that. But if a couple of retired officers come out and said, I'd like to come out and shoot the 15th of April, I am not going to have a deputy out there at either straight time and take them off their shift or assign them out there in off-duty time, a time and a half, in order to do that. That, to me, is a waste of taxpayers' money. And I feel the officers that have the training and want to maintain that training and professionalism are a lot safer to the people of this community than a group of pheasant hunters or fox hunters that are running around the county with high-powered rifles. And what I would like to do is sometime invite the Board of Adjustment to come out and see our range. The NRA firearms range says it must be 10 feet high and 4 feet across at the top of the berm. Our berm is 20 feet high and 8 feet across at the top. You literally drive vehicles around the top of our berm. It has wings on the side, so most of the shooting you're encased in. The insurance company was very impressed with the type of training range that we have. But I would like the board to come out and actually walk through and see what we have for a training facility and see the safety that's built in to that range. What I see here is from other law enforcement agencies who don't have requirements to come in front of Board of Adjustments, is they just have the range. The Ames Police Department firearms range is in the city landfill. It's within the city limits of Ames. How many people live around that? And they don't have these requirements. But I'm just trying to make this opened up for the professionalism of law enforcement and to allow that courtesy to extend to those that have retired to come out again, same people that are out in the public.
But in that one day, they can meet the qualifications that they need to have to maintain their firearm?
For fighting, they can pass the qualification score.
Might come back to this.
somewhat think the public is safer if we have retired officers that are qualified to carry, and I know for a fact from my experience being involved in firearms that there are plenty out there that are carrying that are not that qualified. So I think, I guess I still come back to, as long as they're a resident of Story County, I think having this facility available to them is to our advantage.
I in no way question the safety of the facility or the professionalism of the Sheriff's Department staff. That's not what this is about. I'm a shooter, too. But what this is about is whether this is a minor modification or a major modification. And I think with the language we've drafted, it's a minor modification. If you add retired personnel to this, then we probably need to open up the whole thing and start talking about, well, does there need to be a registration paper on file with the Sheriff's Department of every retired officer who's going to shoot out there? Are our logbooks adequate for now adding retired people as one of the two that needs to be there? And those are things that we might find that our standards are perfectly adequate right now. I just think we need to review it as a major modification if that's something we're going to insist on.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
More comments as we go through the deliberation. I mean, especially the retired people are not precluded from going now. They do have to take the initiative to make sure that someone else is already going out there. There's no question about that. So it's not like they can't, but they do have to take that initiative. There's no question. And given the concerns of the neighbors about the use of this, they don't even want the appearance of the use of this becoming casual. And since we're not precluded, I tend to not go into the major minor sort of thing. I don't think that was really what was asked of us this evening. And kind of contain it to that, primarily the revision of item G, condition G. Does that tend to meet with where folks are at?
I would go along with Aaron that if they wanted to add retire, that's probably the major if they wish to bring it back.
And that's probably not something that we should consider this evening. Okay. So with that being the case, does someone want to suggest wording for the modification?
You're not sharing what you have?
I do have it here, if you want to read it. What I have out of my notes is that condition G would be revised to say two or more people, at least one of which is a certified peace officer or personnel comparably trained by the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy, will be present any time the firing range is used.
So move.
Second. Okay, we have a motion from McGill, a second from Scarlett to approve the modification as proposed by the applicant in case CUP 03-93.1 as discussed by the zoning board with the stipulation that condition G on the existing CUP be revised to say two or more people, at least one of which is a certified peace officer or personnel comparably trained by the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy, will be present any time the firing range is used. Roll, please.
Carlos?
Aye.
McGill?
Aye.
Steele?
Aye.
Miller?
Okay. Thank you. Thank you to the neighbors for participating this evening. I think we've addressed some of those concerns, and hopefully, Sheriff, we've addressed your request this evening. Moving on to... get my things in order here. The third case this evening, which is CUP 08-07.2, E Free Church. Let's go over to the
Good evening. As you mentioned, this is the Ames E Free Church minor modification request. Property owner, in this case, being the First Evangelical Free Church of Ames, general property location. The general property location and the property address I noticed this morning on the staff report are wrong, so just note that there are changes to that. But the general property location for this one is the northwest corner of the intersection of G.W. Carver and Cameron School Road, the property address being 5501 G.W. Carver Avenue. Zoning on the property is A1 agriculture, currently in use. North 40 acres currently remains in agricultural crop production, while the southern portion of that lot does contain the church, the parking lot, the driveways, and the outdoor recreational areas for the church. The Ames Urban Fringe Plan, which is a component of the development plan, does designate the property as rural transitional residential and is also partially in the watershed protection area of Ada Hayden Lake. And both in Ames and Gilbert are within 2 miles of the proposed area. Map here up on the screen does show in the hashed yellow area the current boundaries of the conditional use permit area. As I had mentioned just briefly before, this north 40-acre track right here does remain vacant and mainly an agricultural crop ground. It's this bottom approximate 30 to 35 acres that the majority of the development does take place on currently. I think this picture kind of rehashes that. I did take an image off Google Maps because our current aerial photography is from 2008 and does not show the development. So this here will show that development. And again, that line between the two tracks is approximately in line here and over. So again, you can see it all does take place mainly on that southern portion. Looking at a few pictures of site shots that we took, this is just at the entrance off G.W. Carver showing the current sign that goes together with the facility. This is about the same location. This is looking south onto G.W. Carver. Again, you can see where the entrance comes off the road there. This currently looks from the parking lot about southwest over the area. This one right here is actually off G.W. Carver looking due north. You can see fence located on the property line right there. That was one of the conditions on the original conditional use permit. You can kind of see the wet area right here. You'll notice on the plan that's generally the detention area that the applicant's proposing. This looking up towards Ames Golf and Country Club from the same location, and then looking due east up the road. This one here just showing this current speed limit on the road. You'll see the no parking signs located along there. That was added within the last year just because of some concerns with the recreational uses that were taking place out there. There were vehicles parking alongside the road. There has been some measures you'll see implemented with the Phase 2 plans that do look to alleviate some of those concerns. And then just looking again due south onto the vacant area there. This request is a conditional use permit modification to approve the second of three phase plans, and also this would modify the master plan that was submitted and approved by the Board of Adjustment. The original CUP was approved by the Board of Adjustment on January 2nd of 2008. One of the conditions placed on that was any building not associated with the Phase 1 plans as submitted as part of that conditional use permit would be considered a modification to the CUP and follow the modification requirements. I think one of the main reasons we did do this is knowing that the phases were going to be drawn out sometime within 5 years between each phase, knowing just that generally the master plan can change. We did want to bring them forward as a modification just so we could review any changes that were made on that. Since that initial approval, November 3rd of 2008, roughly 11 months after it was approved, we did issue a zoning permit for the Phase 1 construction. After that, on November 26th of that year, we did issue a zoning permit for the construction of the fence. Again, that was part of the conditions on the original conditional use permit. Looking on July 8th of 2009, there was an insignificant modification that was approved. That was for a temporary overflow parking area located on the backside of the facility approved when the Phase 1 plans. That modification was approved with the condition that stated that temporary overflow area was to be eliminated with the construction of Phase 2. And then on August 31st of 2011, we did issue a permit for the construction of the sign, which I did show you on the first picture there. I won't go through any of this. I think we hashed that out pretty good today, as well as the approval criteria. Just a few notes that we made after review of the modification request. Again, we did determine that this modification was a minor modification. The general concept of the site was approved by the Board of Adjustment in 2008, again, with that condition that the future phases be reviewed as a modification. And we did finally note that the existing conditional use permit has met the conditional use permit criteria through its existence. Looking at the proposed Phase 2 plans, we did note that it obviously will increase the use with the addition of the new 800-seat auditorium that will be used for worship. However, those increases were planned for and reviewed when the Board of Adjustment did approve the initial conditional use permit in 2008. The planned buildings with the new phase will move a little bit to the south side of the existing building instead of where the initial master plan placed them, to the west. That will push the development of the site further east and south on the parcel, increasing the buffer from the Squaw Valley residential area to the west. We did note that traffic will undoubtedly increase with this addition. However, there was a traffic impact analysis that was completed in December of 2007 and submitted with the initial conditional use permit. That analysis did conclude that both G.W. Carver and Cameron School Road would function at a very high level of service once the entire building, the entire build-out of the master plan was completed. There is an additional ingress and egress point planned along George Washington Carver, which is approximately 400 foot south of the existing point. That is a change from the original approval. The applicant has shown that the provided total parking stalls after completion of Phase 2 will be well below the maximum that Story County allows. It is assumed that the new parkings will probably be lighted, the new parking lots will be lighted in the same manner that they currently are. The parking lot plans, we did note, do differ from what the existing parking lot that is out there. This is something that we didn't include in the staff report, and I did want to include it in the presentation. The existing parking lot that is in place right now, there was a condition placed on the original approval that stated that the applicant shall work with Steve Lequa, who is the former Story County Conservation Director, and Wayne Peterson, and to work with them to create a parking lot design that minimizes environmental impact. So the existing parking lot that is out there currently was worked on with those two individuals to make sure that the environmental impact was minimized. There was kind of bioswales that were between the parking modules that are out there to catch stormwater runoff, and currently we're not seeing that on the submitted plan, and I'll show you some pictures of that here in a second, but we did want to note that and hope that you do take that in consideration, that initial condition that was approved. And then we finally noted that although no lighting plans have been submitted for this phase, there was a modification done on the conditional use permit back in July of 2008, and that did approve a site lighting plan. Staff would assume that this type of lighting would be used throughout the development of the site. The site does include approximately 31.86 acres, and the new master site plan shows a total of 10.69 of those acres that will be developed to impervious surface, and 6.01, which will be completed after Phase 2 is done. There is a dry detention pond being built to hold the stormwater design for up to a 100-year event. The stormwater management plan that was submitted did note that anything above a 100-year event will potentially overflow the basin and flow to the west overland to Squaw Creek in the same manner as existing conditions. And I think you guys had a copy of the master plan that was submitted. To show you a few things here, you can kind of see the detention basin that I just spoke of right here. The outlet that goes into there, this would be Cameron School Road right here, this would be G.W. Carver. The current entrance into the facility is at this point right here. The new proposed one off of G.W. Carver will be right here. The existing parking lot area is right here. You can see where that overflow area that was approved with the insignificant modification in this area right there. There is also a new entrance that will be coming off of Cameron School Road. That was approved with the master plan. You can kind of see where they're proposing this line here of parking I believe that is in place to try to alleviate some of the parking concerns that were taking place along Cameron School Road there, and to make sure that there is nobody parking along the county road. Just a few of the interagency comments that we wanted to draw some attention to. First, from Surrey County Conservation, Director Mike Cox would encourage the applicant to consider native plantings in the detention basin. County Engineer Darren Moon noted that he has been working with the applicant to locate the proposed driveways. He did note that the locations will work, but there is permits that will be needed for his office driveway entrance permits. Lastly, he noted that there is an existing driveway directly at the intersection of G.W. Carver and Cameron School Road, and he will require that be removed. Lastly, Environmental Health, they did note that the septic tanks with this proposal look like they are going to be moved, and that the applicant will be required to get a repair permit through Environmental Health. Lastly, Ms. James did note that the mound should accommodate the additional wastewater load from the next building phase. So with that, just some of the conditions that staff would be recommending. First, that the overflow parking area be removed. That was the condition that was placed on that insignificant modification, so we're just transferring that to this modification request. This is something for the board to deliberate here, but staff is recommending that the new parking lot designs match the existing parking lot designs. I'll show you a picture here and above of kind of what I'm talking about. Third, that the native plantings be used in the detention basin. That comes off conservation's interagency comments. A few from the engineer's office, that the driveway entrance permits shall be secured for the new driveways, and that the existing drive northwest of the intersection of G.W. Carver and Cameron School Road be removed. Lastly, that the repair permit from Story County Environmental Health for moving the septic tanks be secured. And on the parking lot issue here, I'll go back to this Google Map photo here. You can see on the parking lots where they kind of did provide those graph kind of small detention areas for the parking lot. And when you go back and look at the plan that they had submitted, we're not seeing that in that plan. And again, we were just hoping that they can kind of match what's out there right now, just knowing that if they do match that, they're going to meet that condition that they work with the Conservation Department and Wayne Peterson on having a parking lot that minimizes environmental impact. So with that, your four conditions are listed on the screen here above. We're included in the staff report, and I would be happy to answer any questions that the board may have on the application.
Getting to that stormwater issue, there's already a condition that says that they'll work with the environment.
Yep.
That's really not something we need to address.
I don't think anything needs to be addressed on that particular condition. Again, it. Yep, the conditions are already in place. The only mention we made of it is that, you know, technically by that condition, they would have to get them back together to do the new parking lot and make sure that's in place, where I think we're of the opinion, and if the board were to agree with that, that if they just kind of match the existing parking lot design, that more than likely we're going to continue to meet that condition.
Temporary overflow parking, is that to the south?
Yep, you can kind of see the gravel strip right there.
Conditioned to be removed right now and replaced with one.
I think the driveway that the engineer is talking about, there is a accurate driveway that I believe was just a farm access point. It's right here in this corner, and I think that's what he's looking to get removed.
But all the access points are what was in the master plan.
The only one is there's an additional one that's going to be coming off of G.W. Carver right here, but that wasn't part of the master plan.
The one off of Cameron School was?
Yep, that was shown in the initial master plan.
What is a dry retention pond? I know that's kind of asking the obvious, but dry all the time? When
there's wet basins and dry basins, and my understanding of the difference between the two is that wet basins typically always have water in them, where dry basins are just meant to hold storm water for a period of time, and, you know, in a situation like last summer where we have a massive drought, they're going to be completely dry and no water in them.
That's why the plantings are important.
Yeah.
Questions for staff?
Okay. Thank you. We'll move on then. Who speaks for the applicant this evening?
My name is Brad Heemstra, and I'll actually be the contractor and also a member of the church. I guess on behalf of the church, Terry DeZoni can answer questions, and then Eric Thompson is the engineer with Fox Engineering, responsible for the design work. So I don't have anything really to add. Charlie did a really nice job in terms of showing an overview of the intent, and we could just answer questions. If it gets too technical, we're going to have Eric answer them.
The last time I remember, I was here for the first master plan as we went down through that, and there was some time that was spent on this detention and stormwater and et cetera. I mean, I'm assuming looking at this parking lot that these parking lots are essentially draining to the adjacent soil. I don't see any storm in there and everything, so it's basically being
same concept as we did originally. I
don't have the middle pieces, but there isn't any storm that's going to increase other than what's coming off the roof, right? Because I see the one storm that's
right. The roof water will be collected and piped over as shown on the drawing. And Charlie, I don't know if you have the master plan, but it kind of shows bioswells sort of being intended in the master plan. Just the distance to paving to the bioswell is a little bit different. It's 4 stalls versus 2, but I don't know if that's in your slide there or not. It's in the packet. No, that's not the master plan that's in the packet. You kind of see an S-hook in the south drive lane. That's,
if you have a sheet, I believe that there are sheets included.
It's right after this page in your packet.
Sheet D.02 if you have that one on there. Okay.
It shows, you can kind of see there's, the concept, we actually met with some traffic consultants and as well as Fox, and the concept here is that if this ever does get developed into the North 40, that there'd be kind of a, from a safety standpoint, a nice drive lane. We're trying to avoid traffic through parking lots. You know, if you can picture just major traffic just getting through north to south through the site going through a parking lot, that master plan shows how that could be accommodated. There'd be more of a drive lane. We already have that with the current entrance from GW Carver. You know, it comes beside the parking lot, and then you enter the parking lot, and you could, in theory, continue west and then make a connection to the north-south road. So, you know, the intent is that parking lot would drain to the west, and you just don't see the bioswells in phase two until we start doing another phase in the future. But, you know, we don't have any problem meeting with the staff as suggested to make sure they endorse our design.
Looking at that design D02 that we've got in front of us, where would the second driveway off of George Washington Carver go in to the church parking lot, or would it?
It's shown on both. You can show it on this plan. You can point to it. The existing one isn't very clear. Maybe just
right is the existing one.
The existing one is right across from the country club.
The existing one is right. The country club entrance is right here, so the existing driveway is actually right here. It doesn't really show up too well in this, but this is okay. The new proposed driveway down here, approximately 400 feet south.
Okay, I'm looking at it wrong. So,
one, and then one up above you.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Sorry. Thank you.
Anything else for the applicant?
No.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it. Any further from the public that wishes to address?
Hi, I'm Kathy Stallman. My property is, can you put up the one that's got both properties on there? My property is surrounded by the church. This Okay, so that fence, that property on that side is mine. In the original master plan, site master plan, they had proposed putting a row of trees along my east fence line there for a buffer for, you know, noise and just a buffer in general, and that never happened. And right now you can see where their soccer fields are, and they have a youth program that goes, I don't know, at least 6 or 8 weeks during the fall, and the noise from that is already intolerable, and it's already like 0.2 of a mile from me. And they're proposing to move the soccer field closer to me, but there's no buffer for noise. And I would like to ask you to either send this back to staff or deny the permit because it does not adequately safeguard the health, safety, and general welfare of persons residing in adjoining or surrounding property. I mean, it's literally so loud you can't have a conversation outside in my yard when they're having these athletic events. And it also diminishes and impairs established property values on my property. I was spent last fall painting my barn, and it was so loud that I had to wear radio headphones just to be able to be out in my yard. If they had done the tree planting as on the original plan, maybe that would have helped. The fence certainly does nothing to contain the noise. It's really just there to keep people from trying to interact with my livestock.
I know there wasn't any conditions that addressed that. The one, let me read the, give me a second here.
It wasn't in the conditions, but it was drawn on their master plan at the time when it was, the original CUP was submitted.
Yeah, and I'm trying to see if I have. Yeah, the original master plan does show, and I'll show you here in a second, it's the one I have. Yeah, that was the that was submitted with the application, so kind of the original master plan that was included there. You do see that, I guess, there are some trees that were be proposed to plant it along that fence line.
There's trees here, but there's no fence on the master plan.
Yeah, and the master plan didn't show a fence, and again, that was a condition that was added by the Board of Adjustment.
And that fence was also never finished. On each end, both at the northwest and the southeast and northwest corners of the property, they just ran the fence about 8 feet and then just left it open so anyone can still walk around there.
You mean?
I raised livestock. And I had asked them as a condition to put up a fence so that people weren't, like, trying to jump over my fence or touch my electric fencing.
Uh-huh.
And they put up all of the fence except for, like, an 8 to 12-foot section on either end. So while the fence is there, there's 8 to 12 feet where people can walk around there. There's no signage, no trespassing. There's no gate. So that's another concern.
Charlie, I don't expect you to know this right off the top of your head, but I'm going to ask just in case you do. Was there any mention in the minutes when the master plan was approved of what those plantings were? I mean, it's hard to tell from this plan that those are trees. They could be 4-foot high shrubs. Is there any discussion of that row of vegetation there?
Yeah, I don't recall any right off the top of my head, but that obviously does not mean that it did not take place.
Well, the county regulations say that the development shall not generate excessive hazards or nuisance conditions, and that Charlie, maybe you can help me out with this, about there being a buffer between disparate uses of property.
I know what you're talking about.
The proposed development should not be unsightly, obnoxious, nor offensive in appearance to abutting or nearby properties. But there's something about us.
The transition element of the criteria does state that the development shall provide for suitable transition and, if necessary, buffer between the proposed buildings and use and surrounding properties. I believe that's
what you're getting at. Thank you.
Do you feel like the changes that are being proposed here increase, decrease, or do nothing to change the impact on your property?
Oh, they absolutely increase that. If I can't stand the noise when they're 2/10 of a mile away, now they're going to be, that detention pond area is the only thing between them and my east fence, which is about 100 feet from my kitchen window. When they're having these athletic events, not only can I not have a conversation outside any place on my property because it's so loud, I can hear it still inside my house.
And the fact that the location of the parking and building addition has moved away from your property doesn't in any way balance
it's not the building or the parking lot, it's where they moved the soccer field or the football field or whatever they call it. It's moving like right next to where I live.
I ask because some people would say kids playing in the noises of sports, of youth, a youth sports program is much preferable to a parking lot in a building.
Well, they might, but they maybe haven't been around their kids' sports program. I mean, there's like a guy out with a PA blasting music. They're like, I can hear everything they say through the PA. There's constant referees whistles. It's like Chinese water torture. You never know when the next whistle's coming. And there's, all the adults, they tell them, they tape it, put it so they can put it up on the internet. So it's like, oh, everybody, let's yell really loud, I don't think that's really proper, if you're trying to be a good neighbor in a residential area. They got a permit for a church, not a soccer field, not an athletic facility.
Is there an accommodation they could make that would satisfy you?
If there's some kind of walled, impervious wall that they could build that would reflect the noise back to them. It's already too late to plant trees because that, if they had done it in the original 2007 plan, maybe, some evergreens would be blocking some sound now, but...
PA system, for example?
Not having a PA system would be a big help, but, it's still a lot of people making a lot of noise. They also have 75 acres on this property. They could put it across from the country club. They don't have to put it right next to, a resident.
Charlie, is it your interpretation that this modification not only moves the location of the building and the parking from the original plan, but it also changes the location of the soccer field? That if we allow this modification, that the field necessarily is permitted in that location?
I'd have to look at that master plan again to see exactly where the location of that was proposed at. I know the general area was proposed to kind of be athletic field, soccer, football field, stuff like that. I don't know if their exact location has changed too much or not.
The original master plan has the soccer field right there oriented differently, turned to 90 degrees. But
when they got the original conditional use plan, it was only for right what you see there developed that's not planted in the grow crop. They said anything else past that, they have to come back for an additional modification.
That was phase one. Is that correct, Charlie?
Yeah, initially
the master plan was approved.
They initially, it was kind of an approval of the master plan, and then they stated before any zoning permits were to be issued for anything above that first phase that they'd have to come back for a modification.
Correct.
the master plan envisions more athletic fields to the north of you.
I realize that. That's why I'm here complaining about it, because no one could live with them. They're also just approved in this wooded lot next to that farm field, or the farmed area, 14 new houses. So 14 to 16 new houses. And these are going to be like $500,000 homes, you know, set into the these wooded lots. So, you know, I'm not going to be the only one complaining about it then. If you've ever spent any time, you know, near like River Valley Park, you can maybe have an idea of how loud that is, and have it, you know, practices almost every night from 4 o'clock on, and then all day, pretty much 1 to dark on the weekend. You know, I'm not saying they can't play soccer, I just don't think I should be required to hear it. If anyone should come out and, you know, talk to me about trying to buy my property and it was during a football game, you know, forget about it. They'd be laughing at me.
Any other questions for...
All right. I would just ask that you know... send that back and ask them to remove the soccer fields next to my house and either replace them or eliminate them, whatever. But thank you.
I'll turn it back over to the applicant for any closing statements.
My name is Terry DeFonia, and I'm the pastor of administrative ministries at First Evangelical Free Church. And first of all, I'd like to thank the board and the staff for their investment in this process, both the initial development of the site and the phase two development. And I think I speak for our church, and the purpose for which we're developing the site is being a great advantage for us in terms of what we're about as a church and connecting with the community and the kind of events and activities that this site in phase one and we anticipate with phase two as being. I would say we want to respond as we're good neighbors in the community to do what we can to mitigate any concerns, and I think we demonstrated that in the first phase with the fence and trying to alleviate the concerns we were aware of, and I think we're open to responding to trees on the east side of the property to help provide some both visual and sound mitigation if that would be of help. And so our interest is in being an effective neighbor, providing the kind of service to the community that would be most helpful to the entire community, but also to do what we can to be the good neighbors to the ones that are adjacent to us, which we are very concerned about. So thanks again to the board for your investment in this process and your consideration of our request. Or maybe others, either Brad or Eric, that want to add to my comment.
Terry said it fine. I think the original concept is we would, you know, add landscaping as we get development closer to the perimeter of the site. Like Terry said, I'm sure we could plant some trees. That's not a big thing. I think the activities that are out there are kind of related, but maybe actually a little bit of a separate discussion maybe we need to have in terms of, you know, phase two, actually, like is pointed out, is not as far west as originally planned.
And I don't think I have anything else to add. If there's any questions about the design of phase two, we should answer those with the board.
With that, we will now close and enter into the deliberation stage. You know, I don't say this very often, but I think this is the case that really, as a board, we're not here to become designers. And for us to consider conditions that address some of the concerns is probably premature. I normally don't like to drag things out, but I'd almost like to propose out of our alternatives. One of them is to table this and move it back to allow the applicant to work with staff to come up with some variation that will allow this to move forward and be successful. I mean, I think they want to be successful, and, you know, it sounds to me like their intentions are good, but I don't want us to become designers.
I agree. There are some specific things. I mean, you don't want to go back and throw out the master plan that was adopted, but apparently the master plan did not lay out much detail about what that plan would be.
Other than the diagram on the plan.
If we were to remand it back, I would certainly want to see some detail about the plantings that are proposed, the maturity, how old the trees are, or the height of the trees when they're going to be planted, what are the species of the trees, what's the density of the planting, you know, that sort of thing, the total width of the buffer area. I think that's where this hangs right now, is on transition. I have three question marks next to that one, and I only have one question mark during next to diminish or impair established property values. I think that one could easily make the case that this development would actually improve the residential property values in that area, so I think that's a hard argument to win without a bunch of really good data. I'll just offer this and shut up, and that is that I think that there's probably some things that can be done here that have nothing to do with the design of the property and much more to do with how activities on the property are facilitated. And so I don't know that, I mean, we have to make some decision generally. We don't want to send this off into a situation where we know that there's going to be a nuisance.
We have to get some guidance for the staff.
But at the same time, I would think that a PA system probably is not what back in 2008, what was envisioned when the master plan was approved. And I just wonder if some things that could be done there that are actually outside of our purview.
Yeah, I would have a tendency to agree with David, though, that we're not designers, and we're not, some of these specifics are kind of outside of our realm, so to speak.
I agree to an extent. I do think, though, that we can hold the applicant to further defining what that buffer is. I mean, we are responsible for making sure that there's adequate buffer. They can design it and tell us all about it.
I agree with that entirely, and I think that's where we'd have to stipulate asking the staff to make sure that those kinds of details are included. Like I said, I would normally have us look for resolution and et cetera, but in this case, I just don't want to try to become a designer, so well, this is what's going to work. It requires some creativity, it certainly requires some time. The other observation, and this would have to do with some other developments that we've had before along Highway 30 or by 35, where we had traffic concerns. We don't have them today. You know, we've got three elements. The concern we had there, and I have to trust the county engineer on this one, frankly, right now, but as we move on into other phases, I think we need to be aware that this could come up. The concern out there was that when church was either coming in or going out, that nobody else could get on or off that road because so many cars were queued. Remember, we went through that, and we had some turning lanes that were expanded for more capacity and other issues like that. We don't have that today, and we don't have any reason we'd be guessing. and I don't want to guess, but I suspect as we move forward into phase three, that that could be something and something we would definitely ask staff to consider. So, I mean, the county engineer and people are going to have to monitor that. But that was a concern that somebody comes up to Camden School Road at the T intersection and they can't get on just because there's so many cars mm-hmm. coming and that they sit there for 20 minutes. And we had to address that before. So that's not a concern today, not one that I could voice, but I can almost see it coming.
I can foresee it coming because I've also been in there when there has been a large gathering. Okay. And we've had a lot of concerns just coming off of George Washington Carver.
The entire deputies to come out and control traffic.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's just, you know, going with your question marks, that's a question mark that's a dashed question mark, but it's one that's really there. So, without my being presumptive, it sounds like if you go back to this particular report that identifies four different things that we can do. The fourth item in there would be to the Story County Board of Adjustment tables a conditional use permit minor modification as put forth in the case back to the applicant for further review and modification, specifically asking for the staff to work with the applicant to develop details associated with the buffering and the transition, particularly at that west
side. Mm-hmm. Can we go that route without first approving the findings of fact?
I suspect if we're going to go back and table it, we're going to be back to do the whole thing anyway.
Right, right.
If we were not getting to that point and we were actually... That's kind of why I jumped to the bottom.
So do you wish a motion to that effect?
Well, that's what I'm suggesting.
I would so move.
Second. So we've got a motion from McGill and a second from Steele to have the Story County Board of Adjustment table the conditional use permit modifications that was forth in case CUP 08-07.2 back to the applicant for further review and modifications, asking that the staff work with the applicant to develop details that are associated with the transition zone between the property and the property immediately to the west. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All in favor then? Roll, please.
Miller.
Aye.
Scarlett. McGill.
Aye.
Steele.
Aye. Added any other direction on that? I'm sorry, but the process, and I understand it, but the process is that once we close the case for deliberations, that it's now in the hands of the board and... That's why that says the staff needed any of
that. Yeah, and that's so essentially it's just looking to get a better idea of the transition factors that play into the conditional use permit, the, you know, where the fields are going to be located. Obviously, all that stuff is in play, but just kind of the buffer zone between the two uses.
We're assuming there's choices. We're not qualified to determine what the best mm-hmm. choices are, and I think we just need to allow a little bit of time to have that developed and our understanding and that staff is comfortable that they've, you know, made an effort to do that.
Yeah, coincidentally enough, there's one alternative right when this got brought up that, and I'm assuming Leanne probably went to the same area I did, but we just reviewed a subdivision just to the west of this area on Monday night, and one of the concerns there was the removal of trees that would need to take place in our ordinance, really trying to mitigate the removal of significant trees, that's called, in there and just kind of lessening some of the regulations that we have on that. So I don't know if there's a way we could work with the two proposed developments to maybe bring some of those trees over to this site, but it is an option. I don't know how much you guys have had discussions with that developer or not.
That's
but,
an example of some creativity,
yeah.
Given time to address it, make sure everyone...
Yeah. Because like I said, yeah, Monday night there was a concern that we're getting rid of too many trees. What do we do? And here we have a concern of we don't have any trees, so...
On. Do we have any other business before the board this evening?
Before you go forward, do you have an expectation of time frame that it comes back before you?
As far as I'm concerned, the sooner the better if it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think this is, I think people just need some time to think about what they've heard and to go through that. I mean, they've got a long-term plan to develop the property. I know they want to be good neighbors, and it's just some time to put some thoughtful time in to do it. If that thoughtfulness can come up in the next month, that's a big time by me.
Sure, for sure.
I don't look at this as being a protracted sort of a thing. I just thought it was beyond the purview of the board at this point for what we were being asked. Okay. Other business? Any other comments from the board members?
I have a question, Leanne. In a situation where we've made gone ahead and done something that was against what the board wanted or what has gone outside the process, what, and I've asked this before, what can we do about it? I mean, fines, whatever. Example, we had this evening, we had one that we approved. However, that went into effect prior to, it was an illegally run operation.
In that particular case, we issued a notice of violation, and that was a rather protracted process to bring that property into conformance. On both the delay in the property owner's end and then county staff, as we've looked to manage the workload without an official code enforcement officer anymore. I mean, as you well know, we now no longer have that position, so we're trying to equally distribute that among existing staff.
But what are our enforcement options?
I will be bringing that back to you, because on April 15th, the Board of Supervisors will be meeting to address in a work session format the code enforcement program for Story County.
Okay.
And whether we are strictly by complaint basis enforcement, or if we're out there as a code enforcement officer would be looking for violations, or just at least noticing violations and following up accordingly. Right now, I don't have a good answer. If we are made aware of a violation and we can note that, we will issue a notice of violation. But beyond that, whether or not we have a teeth to do a citation, that's yet to be determined.
Like fines, something of that nature. We've had a couple of those that have come up. Yeah, one in particular. But then on the other hand, you know.
There's been instances in the past, too, where the Board of Adjustment has approved something such as your first thing. I can think of a few variances that got approved where the building was built without a permit, and the Board of Adjustment approved it and then set, for example, a $500 fine on top of it.
We had one individual I remember doing that with.
And that, and we've verified with the county attorney's office. That is within your purview to do. Or appeal your decision. Okay. At your next meeting, I should have some more clarity. We're in a bad situation right now. We're not, and I really am not able to give clear direction on what the board's expectations are for code enforcement, because I'm not sure what it is.
Thank you.
Items from staff?